Now, an hour of clarity for exhausted people of our nation mired in toxic partisanship. Left versus right. Us versus them. While we pay to keep our politicians fighting, how do we, the people, rise up and solve the great challenges of our time? We do it by embracing freedom and liberty. There may be no such thing as a free lunch, but this hour is as close as it gets. Welcome to A Free Solution.
All right, welcome to A Free Solution. I'm Kevin Wilson today, joined by Tim, the Freedom Variant O'Connor.
I'm here, Kevin. I'm excited about talking about, like, cultured meat products and some local New York news that actually I got an interesting one I want to get out there. It's something I've talked about in the past. You've got some stuff.
We're gonna run through who are, like, the meat story down in Florida.
Yeah.
You know, our right to eat whatever Franken meat we want.
Yeah, man.
and so, like, a whole bunch of, like, local stuff. So I think we're gonna run through a whole bunch of stuff in the second segment. So we got, like, a couple New York stories, local stories. And then we're gonna talk about the Libertarian Party and their interesting new strategy to draw attention to itself, relating to Donald Trump. WYSL audience, stay tuned. If you want to know Donald Trump's latest speaking engagement, it's with the Libertarian Party. It's
gonna be epic, Kevin. So we're gonna fundraise off of it. We're bringing eyes to us. My libertarian cred is not threatened by the populist authoritarian Donald J. Trump. Just not.
We're gonna talk about that. So stay listening for the third segment. We're gonna talk about that then. But first, we're gonna talk about lab grown meats. The state of Florida, Governor Ron DeSantis recently signed this bill, and the Florida legislature, of course, have now banned the sale of synthetic meat in Florida, lab-grown meat in Florida, except for astronauts. They did make an exception. You can sell to NASA.
And they'll buy it, man, because they're all in on it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like, if they could discover a process to grow meat, you know, in space, it's probably easier and cheaper than, like, trying to get, like, a cow to adapt to zero-G. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I mean, like, look, if I was in space...
Cows ain't going to do good in space. If I was in space,
I would eat lab-grown meat. I would. I promise you, I would be.
Yeah, if you're in space, you'd be like, "Yeah, that's fine." But, like, down here on Earth, you're like, "Yeah, just give me a real cow."
Yeah, yeah, I like the whole cow's filtering in the environment into its body, and then
filtering in all the antibiotics and all the hormones and the.
So that's actually a persuasive piece of this discussion, right? Like that they are saying this is. Antibiotic free, GMO free, cultured meat cells.
Yeah, that supposedly
they somehow rapidly turn into and cultivate into the right amount of fat, the right amount of meat, and something about it freaks me right out.
Briefly, let's talk about, like, what it is. Like, sure. And I just retweeted a thread on this. Now, I'll share the link in the show notes and in the comments if anyone wants to, like, read up on, like, what one of these companies said to the FDA about how their process works. But basically they take, like, some stem cells and like some cells from, like, you know, a chicken or whatever animal they're trying to grow. And then they kind of run through a few cycles and figure out, like, which ones are going to work for this process, which, you know, chicken or cow DNA is going to work. And then they have a culture that they can build from. And then they, you know, differentiate these cells. So, like, the different, like, muscles and tissues and fats that, you know, you would get from a cut of chicken, but without, like, the entire process of growing an entire chicken with all the organs and, you know, feathers and everything else. You just grow the cut of meat that you want. Mm-hmm. I mean, and they basically, in this case, like, they haven't scaled it up yet, but they're basically, like, 3D printing, like, you know, like a chicken breast.
I think that's pretty cool. Yeah. I think it's pretty accurate. That's an accurate assessment. They do target rapid growing cells for this experiment in food, you know, presentation, this food development. That does in fact concern me, because, like, honestly, lots of problems with targeting fast-growing cells, right? That so I have a couple concerns besides just the fast-growing cells. Like, fast-growing cells in a human body generally turn into a disease, right?
Right. And I know people worry, like, you're basically eating, like, chicken tumors, right? Like, that's
that's okay.
But, like, is that like an actual safety factor or just an ick factor? Because I think that, like, so much of this is just an ick factor. Like,
could be.
Like, John Fetterman, like, tweeting out, like, did you know this is how it's grown? And it's, like, some, like, stainless steel food equipment. And I'm like, okay, sure, whatever, man. Like, that's how, like, a lot of food looks nowadays. Anything made in a factory kind of looks like that.
That whole Star Trek food synthesizer thing comes to mind, you know? But
yeah,
this isn't quite that. Like, it's not harvesting molecules from the air and presenting it to me as chicken, which actually would be more attractive to me than capturing stem cells, bathing it in synthetic nutrients, and then, like, shaking a big vat and having, like, chicken breasts pop out the other end.
Like, it's just an intermediate step. We're like, we're one step closer to a replicator. Like, I'm just, we're gonna get there.
Yeah, yeah, no, I agree. Like, that this is a step in that direction. And I would be, I'm not kidding, like, a food replicator, I'm not as uncomfortable with that imaginary concept as I am with capturing stem cells, selecting rapid growing ones, and saying, hey, here's your meat. It tastes delicious. You know what I mean?
Like, I mean, supposedly it still tastes pretty good. Like, you know, like, composition wise, it's like similar. Like, a lot of the cuts that they use in samples of the FDA were like a little bit lower in fat, but like, you could probably adjust that to get the fat ratio you want.
Sure.
You know, I mean, cause that's, you know, kind of a nice thing about it is you can get exactly like the type of like meats and like different, you know, like if you want to make what, like a replication of like Wagyu beef, you could,
yeah,
eventually.
Yeah, no, and you will, which will kind of attack agriculture in a way, won't it? Like, if everybody can just get
and
Wagyu beef,
then right, and I, like, I'm sure people would still like want to buy the real thing, right? Like the process and the love and the culture that goes into like getting a really, you know, well raised, good and delicious cow, right? But like the agriculture industry thing is like where I think this really comes in, because I know, like, in the press release that the Florida like executive branch put out, they specifically talk about how this is done basically to protect farmers, right? Like, this is
they're honest.
It's like fully like cronyism. Like, hey, we're doing this because like the existing ag industry was freaked out by it, and you know they didn't say that verbatim, but it's implied that the existing industry is freaked out by it, and we're trying to save jobs. We're trying to save the farmers' jobs. Well, that's not. It's not really a good reason to ban this, right? Again, like, if there's legitimate safety concerns, sure, right? And that's probably going to be on a company-by-company basis. But to me, like, okay, like, this group doesn't want competition. That's not a good reason to, like, ban the sale of a competitive product that, like, could end up being, like, cheaper and better in the long run for your average person.
Yeah, and it could be an experiment in credit farming, right? Because the government could say, hey, you know what we really need to do? Subsidize this new industry over this old industry because it lines up with our paranoia about climate change, and it allows us to manipulate the emotionally crippled 80% of society.
Yeah. I mean, like, I mean, maybe, I'm but see, saying, like, what, you know, what you're doing though is you're spinning hypotheticals when, like, the actual reality is that the cronyism is on the side of, like, big agriculture, right? Like, because, like, you're always talking about, like, oh, there's always money and stuff involved, and I'm always like, oh, I don't know, I think people usually have good intentions, but in this case, they're like, yeah, we're doing this to protect our buddies. Like, they're just like out and out. I'm like, oh, okay, so like that's what it is. But like, the scenario you paint is like, yeah, maybe, like, because it's more carbon friendly, which people make the argument, or, you know, it doesn't involve animal cruelty, like, progressives could get behind supporting this cause. But like, the subsidies haven't come yet. When the subsidies do come, I'm going to be criticizing them right along with you, because they will be coming. You're right. Like, they will eventually be coming. But like, for now, they're trying to squash an industry that doesn't exist. This is just the right wing version of cronyism. California and New York will get to subsidizing this eventually, so we will be like playing both sides, but
you know what? Like, look, I agree that I'll go down these slightly paranoid wormholes. Okay. But I feel rather justified in being skeptical of new products that are approved by the FDA and the USDA. Like, because I don't trust
Tim, just
them.
Less if we abolish them, then we can just have the products.
I would
Tim,
feel
that's the libertarian position.
Honestly, like, I'd feel less reactionary towards cultured beef products if they weren't bragging about how the USDA and the FDA have approved them.
Wait, like, no, like that, like, that's really the hangout. Like, they approve of, like, all beef sales, right? Like,
this McDonald's burgers, bro. I don't eat McDonald's burgers. We've had the,
I mean, they're
I don't think it's meat.
They're technically fit for human consumption, Tim. It's fine.
Okay.
I think McDonald's burgers are, like, fine. We've talked about it before. I'm just like, it's okay.
Right. And I eat Taco Bell, so I get it, right? Like, there are things that I trust. Like, I trust that McDonald's doesn't want Kevin to die from eating one burger, right? Yes. And I trust that Taco Bell doesn't want me to die from eating one chicken burrito, grilled cheese with a little bit of those extra crunchy red things in there and some sour cream and stuff. Like, it's pretty good. Like, I trust that they don't want us to die from that, but I also don't trust them to worry about any kind of long-term relationship with us if we eat their food every day. So I'm not sure that that's particularly rational. Like,
yeah, but like, you shouldn't eat like the same food every single day anyway, right? Like,
I know, but it's so good and it's so addictive, right?
Because I like Taco Bell, but sugars. If I ate it twice a day for like years, I would die. Like, that's, I can't do that, you know, like, but in all things in moderation. And I mean, like, and that's, again, that we're kind of getting off topic a little bit, but, you know, like, back to the meat thing, like, again, you can, if this eventually becomes a thing, if the government doesn't, like, you know, smother it in, you know, the crib here, then we could just use this to, like, make whatever we're making normally would be at home if we want to, right? Again, you can, okay, so I'm going to buy my lab grown, like, you know, 80% lean beef because I want, you know, that's what I want, some ground beef, and I make whatever I'm going to normally make with it. And I like, if I can't taste the difference and, like, you know, structurally there's no difference between that and like a cow that was just ground up, like, who cares? And if the only and if the difference eventually is like, it's a lower price and it was made with some of the fewer negative externalities that come with raising livestock, which there are some, again, I'm willing to accept those negative externalities now, but like, they're not an inevitability, they're not even a necessity long term, then why shouldn't I be able to choose this alternative that doesn't have those negative externalities?
What are you like suggesting that you should choose for me? Like, that's the question.
No, I'm not suggesting that, I should choose for you.
I meant that in a general sense. Should that become the democracy version of you get to choose for me because of what you're perceiving as negative externalities? Yeah, do you see what I mean? That's where I see it.
But you're spinning a hypothetical.
And yes, I get that that's conjecture. Yeah. But also that cultured meat is good for me is also conjecture, right?
No, I mean, it might be good for you. It might not. Like, I don't know. But I should be able to make that choice. You know, again, I make the choice to, like, you know, eat Doritos too, and I know Doritos aren't good for me. Like,
they're not.
They taste good.
You're right.
No, they taste good though. Like, yeah, I love me some Cool Ranch, but like, you know, it's that should be my choice. And again, like, I'm always on the side of maintaining choice. If you want to eat the lab grown meat, then great. If you don't want to eat it, then that should also be a choice. Consumers should be able to. And we don't even know at this point if like lab grown meat is ever going to be like scalable. Or like, you know, consumer like ready, right? Like, because right now it's not. Like, people are talking about like it's a thing that's going to be hitting the market now, and it's really not ready for the market.
Yeah. So $150 for a burger is the price that I'm seeing right now.
Yeah.
That by the time it hits a table at a restaurant, you know, so that's like $100 a pound probably. So
yeah, like it's just it's not there yet. It might be eventually, you know, in the same way like that all innovative products kind of go through an initial phase of being expensive and still needing research and still need to be scaled up, right?
Yeah.
But like, I don't think anyone should stop your ability though to like either buy beef from a farmer or raise your own chickens or like any of that stuff, right? Again, sure. Like, to me, like, for the most part, the negative externalities of like most meat production are like, I'm okay with that in terms of like pollution or even like, I know there's some people that are very cruel to animals, but most farmers are not like, most farmers take pretty good care of their animals. You know, that's what it is. You should be able to do that. Like, again, I'm going to be on your side when the government's like, you know, actually, in order to protect the earth and save, you know, on carbon and protect blah, 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 like, we're going to ban, like, factory farming and we're going to ban meat, like, conventional meat production. Yeah, I'm going to be against that.
Yeah, and I'm already on your side that this act in Florida is ridiculous. It's absurd, okay? Like, the protection of the U.S. agriculture industry is uncomfortable, but that it, even worse, banning a product is absurd, right? Like, I'm on the side of choice. And if you want to eat or invest in lab-grown cultured meat, which I don't want it to be called meat, but okay.
I was gonna wait for that. I was like, I know we had discussed on Twitter, like, what should they be labeled, right? Like,
yeah.
And what should be called? But you don't think it should be like, if there's a package of this stuff sold, you don't think it should be able to say meat on it?
Perhaps I would like accustomed to that. But the issue that I have is that we don't even get to know where our meat products that are currently in the grocery store are coming from. We don't know their country of origin. We don't know anything about it. I'm uncomfortable with that. I think that, and it's not so much that it's illegal to label where it comes from. Like, I could, as my understanding is if I try to label something I'm selling in a store as made in the USA food, like, that's illegal. So I don't get to know whether it comes in on a container ship from 10,000 miles away. I'm uncomfortable with that. I think that the government could add value to society by being a teller of truth, right? Like, saying, all right, like, let's let the market decide, you know, let's be honest. This is lab grown meat. Here you go. Try it or not. But I don't think it should be like banned. No, absolutely not.
Yeah.
And also my own personal discomfort with it is irrelevant there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Exactly. It doesn't matter if you don't like it. It's people should have the choice. I don't think it's illegal to like label stuff like made in USA, meat in USA. There was a problem with some imported meats that were using that label because it would be like mixed with like USA produced products. And then they were labeling it as like produced in the USA when like it wasn't 100% produced in the USA. And that's like a new USDA rule happening.
I'll revisit that issue because, again, things get stuck in my brain, but I'm pretty sure there's a problem with labeling. You don't get the country of origin for your meat product. And I think that we should get the country of origin for our meat product. And I think that U.S. agriculture.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, I think U.S. agriculture would thrive in that circumstance. I think people would pay extra money for U.S. grown beef if they could label it as such in the store. And I don't think that they can. But I could be wrong. Like, well, look, Massey's Prime Act had some verbiage about this, so I don't know. We'll check it out. We'll revisit this issue down the road.
Yeah, and but I do agree with you though. Like, people should understand what they're getting, right? So if they are getting, you know, lab grown meat, like, there should be some term of art that says, you know, like, cultured meat product or something, whatever. I still think it should be called meat because people understand what it is. Because like. Yeah, there's that whole like debate about like, should we ban the term like milk for like almond milk and coconut milk and whatever? And I'm like, this is a stupid debate. And like, the dairy farmers are trying to like, you know, protect their corner of the industry because they're like, oh, people are confused and they might be getting the wrong product if you label your, you know, your oat milk as milk, and they might be thinking they're getting dairy. I'm like, no, they're not. No one thinks they're getting
that. No one's confused.
They're specifically not getting dairy by purchasing oat milk. Like,
right. As dumb as society is, almond milk does not confuse them between cow milk. Like, it's just not.
Not at all. They're specifically seeking out a non-dairy product. That's the whole point. All right. Well, anyway, we're out of time for this segment. Thanks again for joining us here on A Free Solution. We're going to be back in just a few minutes. Talk to you soon.
Introducing a sobering and unavoidable truth. The latest advancements in artificial intelligence have made cyber attacks easier than ever before. Cyber criminals are relentlessly targeting your business right now, seeking the tiniest opening in your defenses to drain your accounts and steal sensitive data. Your finances and your customers' trust are on the line. Call the experts at Simple Tech Innovations now at 585-999-TECH to secure your business today. Don't wait until it's too late. Make the call today. 585-999-TECH.
Hey, this is Kevin Wilson, host of A Free Solution. You ever need a tool for just one project, but didn't want to spend the cash for something you'd use just once or twice? Well, there's a new tool library in Rochester where you can borrow just the thing you need instead of buying a new one. It's called the Tool Shed from the Southeast Area Coalition, and membership starts at just $25 a year. Use it for home projects or to support your business. Learn more and become a member at seektoolshed.org. That's S-E-A-C, toolshed.org.
In 1926, the Avon Fire Department put an Aaron's Fox pumper into service. It now sits fully restored in a museum near Toronto. Avon has an opportunity to bring the Fox home for its 100th birthday for a fraction of its appraised value. The Aaron's Fox Full Circle Preservation Society needs your help. Look us up on Facebook or call 615-6463. Let's bring home the Fox.
A Free Solution on the WYSL stations.
Welcome back to A Free Solution. I'm Kevin Wilson here today, joined by Tim, the Freedom Variant O'Connor.
I'm here, brother.
And we ended up talking about, Tim had mentioned the USA Today article. We ended up talking about that during the break. We ended up talking about the Libertarian Party for a little bit, the 2020 nomination, like respectability and name recognition of candidates. We didn't do our full discussion on Trump, but somehow we accidentally got on a tangent for a little bit.
Yeah.
We're gonna pivot from Frank and Meat to some local and New York State news. So, Tim, what do we want to start with?
Well, I'm eager to the people that are listening to the show, to Otsego County residents especially, I want to talk about the fact that yet again, we have an example of the government doing things that I just don't agree with, Kevin. Even though ostensibly they're for a good cause, they condemn a building, they kick all of the people out of a building, they take ownership of the building, they sell the building to their friends, and then they get NGOs and nonprofits involved in redeveloping the building that was condemned to the point of where they were going to demolish it, allegedly. Like, this is wild, okay? They stole this lady's property. She had been spending thousands of dollars on it to fix it up, and it drives me crazy. It's a former Oneonta Hotel in Oneonta, New York, and there's a certain amount of injustice here that I don't think people understand.
Yeah. I mean, so what would you propose as a better alternative?
That she kept her building and that she was renting to people, right? Now there's a real homeless problem. They kicked people out of her hotel that are now on the streets. It's just that simple, you know? So she was actively trying to fix it up. Her and her husband were spending money on it. They were fixing it up. They were caring for their residents. They were providing some supervision, even whatever small amount that they could, right? Which were mostly an adult male affected population, okay? Mm-hmm. Afflicted population. I think, should I spell it right out? Like, I think that they were struggling with alcoholism, drug addiction, things like that.
Yeah.
And so they were in a residence at the Oneon Hotel. They condemned the code office condemns it. Mm-hmm. They take possession of it. They evict all of these guys, and they have no backup plan for them to stay. And now they've held on to it for 2 years, and now they're selling it to a non-governmental organization, and they're going to develop it. Mm-hmm. And I'm uncomfortable with that. I think that she had made a commitment, and she deserved respect for her commitment.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's understandable. I don't know that situation specifically. Like, I imagine, like, cause so I've seen stuff like that happen in the Rochester area. And at first I'm like, oh yeah, it's ridiculous. And then you find out the conditions are actually pretty terrible. I don't know if that's the case, right? Hopefully that wasn't the case, but like a lot of times I think I would err on the side, as you do, of like, hey, even an imperfect housing situation is better than no housing situation at all.
Correct.
For a lot of people. And I kind of apply that generally, right? Like, cause people talk about like, oh, like tenement style housing in like big cities, and like you have these small rooms and shared spaces and stuff. And like, they're just, because they're cheap doesn't mean they're good. I'm like, yeah, well, I mean, for some people, if like you are like, you know, on the cusp of homelessness or just starting out in a city or like just struggling to get by, a situation where you have a room and a shared kitchen space and it's small and like not the best conditions is better than living on the street, right?
Yeah.
It's better than the alternative.
Solving problems with options, Kevin, right? Yeah. Like options that people can choose for themselves. That's how you solve real problems.
Right.
Force and coercion, regardless of its intended benevolence, is problematic.
Yeah. And the only solution that like local and state government and the federal government can seem to find for this type of situation isn't to just like let people build this like kind of marginal housing or let people maintain this marginal housing. It's always get the nonprofit in there or, you know, government built housing. Right.
Right.
That's like right. That's the only solution they see. It's not like just let people build like some of these smaller units. It's, well, we got to get a nonprofit in here, and somehow it ends up costing, you know, tens of thousands of dollars per unit to both like build and maintain it every single year. And you're like, how on earth is it this expensive and sometimes ineffective too? Sometimes they're really great at what they do, right? But sometimes like wildly ineffective, and it just becomes like a, you know, just a big trash pile of money burning.
It's a circular economy. The government creates a problem, spends money on the problem, claims success, passes the expenses off to the taxpayer, and says, look how good our economy is. We've done wonderfully spending people's money. And from an economic standpoint, the only way out of our current spending situation and our current borrowing situation is massive devaluation. And I'm going to talk about that probably every show, every single chance I get. Like, this is a disaster.
Yeah.
It's going to happen. It's happening. What am I saying? It's happening.
All right. So I want to get a couple other ones in. We got so a few minutes left still.
Let's do it.
I talked about how the assessment for my house went way, way up. Like nearly doubled. Mild credit to the city of Rochester. I think they sort of have to do this, but the taxes are going down to compensate. The taxes are actually going down like 37% in response to like the assessments where everything like doubled in value. So effectively a lot of folks are going to end up paying the same or less. And this is what happens in a lot of cities, but like, I know I did like a whole segment where I was mad about that.
Sure.
And I was like, oh yeah, but like this might happen. I just kind of threw it out there. I just want to throw it out there to give, again, it's not exactly credit, cause I think they sort of have to do this,
yeah.
But to just like acknowledge like, okay, this is how it's going to end up working is, yeah, my house like doubled in assessment value, but my taxes are going down.
They reassessed a number of properties. They found a bunch of properties that were undervalued according to the assessment rolls,
right,
that actually drastically impacted a guy like you and probably several other people in your neighborhood, yeah, whose assessments also rose.
Oh, my neighborhood,
but the tax went now assigned so differently, right?
Yeah. And so, and again, I think my taxes are still going to end up probably going up a bit. But basically, I'll quote from one of the local news articles, and I'll post a link to it. It said, in all, the residential property taxes plan to drop 37.7% citywide from 17.84 to 11.11 per $1,000 of assessed value. And so this is a WXXI article by Gino Finelli. So I'll share a link just to give credit them from what I'm quoting from. Sure. So it is going down a bit though. So depends on how much your house went up. It might go up, might go down. We'll say. I think I probably still ended up paying a little bit more, which stinks. But you know, my neighborhood did go up in value. I mean, the houses in my neighborhood, it's like, I paid a very reasonable, like very low amount for my house, in fact. But like now there's like 1,000 square foot houses that like look like garbage in my neighborhood going for like $169,000 when they would have gone for like $60,000 10 years ago. So.
All right. See, that's wild.
Yeah.
That's a sign of the devaluation that I'm talking about and a credit-based economy. So but, I don't know what to tell you.
Or it's all, you know, because like the neighborhood's so valuable and everyone wants to live here now.
Maybe you moving there changed.
I moved in and everyone's like, man, yeah. Kevin's here. Great. Wow. Like we got to be near this guy. Like whatever they're bidding for that house, double it. I went in.
Absolutely. No, and look, neighborhoods do get better over time. Neighborhoods do get worse over time. It does depend on the what? Luck? Fortuity?
Yeah.
People being kind to each other, people being cool to each other. That's how a neighborhood gets better. So I'm glad you're in the right neighborhood. Let's in this case, assume it's not because of devaluation of the dollar. And how's that sound?
People want to live near all the breweries that are near my neighborhood.
Yeah, and that sounds pretty funky, and that sounds really cool to me, you know?
But, all right, so I wanted to bring up that one local thing. And so one other interesting thing I saw is that New York State is – well, there's someone in the New York State Senate who wants to allow liquor stores – to sell non-alcoholic versions of alcoholic beverages.
God bless her.
And which is illegal right now because New York State, it's not the dumbest alcohol system because I've been to like Maryland and Pennsylvania and
boy, they're dumber.
So much dumber.
They are so dumb.
New York State does have an interesting thing where we require liquor and wine to be sold at independent stores. They cannot be sold at grocery stores, and the liquor stores have to be owned by, they can't be a franchise. You can only own one.
Yep.
You can't own a chain or liquor store. So every liquor store is ostensibly independent.
Ostensibly. Right.
Yeah.
But then there's only like one or two suppliers for liquor. So it's somebody has, some control.
My goodness. Patrick on Facebook says, try Utah. Yeah. I'm sure Utah is.
Hey, that guy's got the same last name as me.
He sure does. Crazy.
That's crazy.
Patrick O'Connor there. Yeah, but how does that work? But so but in the liquor stores you can't really sell all that much, right? Like they can't sell like the mixers there, they can't sell sodas there, and they can't even sell like the non-alcoholic versions of like there's a whole bunch of different like non-alcoholic products that they could sell, right? Like
non-alcoholic, and it's a rapidly growing market, Kevin. Rapidly.
Yeah. can't sell non-alcoholic beer. You can't sell like the they have these like non-alcoholic like gins and stuff too, which are they're okay, right? Like you should.
What?
Yeah, I don't know. I've had them. Like they're okay. I'm thinking about that. I can't drink alcohol right now, Tim.
Oh, okay. Yeah, never mind. That sounds really good, Kevin.
Yeah, it's good, buddy. Yeah, no, I'm sure it's great.
That sounds awesome.
But like for some people, like who don't want it, but they want the taste of this. Like I genuinely enjoy non-alcoholic beer. Right. Like I'll say like the non-alcoholic like Guinness tastes like Guinness. Right. It tastes like it. And sometimes I'm like, shoot, I've had like six beers. I cannot have another beer, but I want to like continue drinking something.
Right.
I have an NA beer, right? Like that's how I usually consume those is like, okay, I'm like, you know, at a house party all afternoon and I have to drive. Okay. I can have two beers and then I can have, you know, I just drink like my six pack of like NA IPAs. Right. And that's how it usually goes. And
all right.
Yeah, no, Tim, you're like, I don't get it. I don't know why you do it.
No, I would say that I went through a phase where I very much limited my alcohol consumption for a few years when I was around 28 years old. I would drink O'Doul's and Pabst Blue Ribbon NA occasionally.
O'Doul's is garbage. But I found that
it just increased the desire to drink. So I just had to kind of set them aside too. So I don't know. I mean, whatever. But So let's talk more about what they're proposing to do. They're going to lift the ban on liquor stores selling non-alcoholic beverages to help liquor stores ostensibly.
Yeah.
Is it going to help them? Like, I'm not, I don't
Well, know. It's, I mean, again, it's not even like they can sell like whatever they want. They can sell like imitation, like gin or, you know, like that type of stuff. Like it's specifically like basically not alcoholic wine, spirits and mocktails.
Yeah.
So it's not even like they get to sell whatever. And again, you could just, I don't know, like we could just allow grocery stores to sell liquor and like wine and whatever and do what places other states do, instead of having this weird, you know, limited system. But, I don't know, like I, again, any loosening of the laws, like I'm fine with it.
I guess that's where I come down on too. It's irrelevant in a way, but okay. You know, like, all right, maybe more people stop in, buy some lottery tickets and a bottle of non-alcoholic wine. And that would be good for my local liquor store that I go visit once every 2 months, you know, like that's fine. That sounds cool.
You know, like at any time, like we can, make it more legal for people to sell what they want to sell. And again, if they want to sell it, great. If they don't want to sell it, then, you know, like whatever. It's do what you want to do and do what makes sense for your business. But if some stores feel like there's actually a non-alcoholic bar opening up in my neighborhood, like where this is like all they sell.
Okay.
It's like this type of stuff.
When they go out to fail miserably and crash and burn in 6 months, like, okay, thanks for
maybe
trying.
It works. It's not.
Maybe it does work.
I mean, again, for like younger people, like a lot of people are like, I really like the taste of craft beer, but like, I can't have my like 10%, you know.
It's going to be a haven for black market drug sales, Kevin. I want you to know that, like right now.
Think
like,
so?
The kids are going to accumulate there and they are going to be like, you know what they're going to be doing.
I think it's all going to be like straight edge, like adults who are like, what? Yeah, you know, like I have kids now and I don't want a hangover tomorrow. Like that's
honestly, that's crazy. Did you get that statement though?
No.
Anyways, let me put that back up there. I got a comment from my brother out.
Sorry.
He went to Utah and like you were saying, our laws are messed up, but the last time he got a drink at a restaurant in Utah, a local person had to sign a formal document for it to be legal. That's like, so
hilarious.
We're one of the freer states.
Weirdly enough, we kind of are, but
and we're better than Pennsylvania and Maryland. Like you got to go to the state liquor store and the state beer store,
run store, and like
that's real.
Like restaurants are weird about serving beer in like Pennsylvania too. Like you got to, All right. Anyway, we're out of time for this segment. Thanks again for joining us here on A Free Solution. We're going to be back in just a few minutes. Talk to you soon.
Introducing a sobering and unavoidable truth. The latest advancements in artificial intelligence have made cyber attacks easier than ever before. Cyber criminals are relentlessly targeting your business right now, seeking the tiniest opening in your defenses to drain your accounts and steal sensitive data. Your finances and your customers' trust are on the line. Call the experts at Simple Tech Innovations now at 585-999-TECH to secure your business today. Don't wait until it's too late. Make the call today. 585-999-TECH.
To live the quality of life we deserve in truth and freedom, informed by our Constitution, our laws, and traditions, we need to pick the best leaders possible. Recent experience certainly illustrates that. Free and accurate elections are essential if we're going to restore our society and safeguard our rights. New York Citizens Audit is a volunteer, nonpartisan group which has been lobbying for open source audits of the State Board of Elections and reform of the electoral process statewide. Did you know Citizens Audit has uncovered over 1 million felony violations of election laws? law that in 2020 there were 625,000 more voter registrations than existing voting age citizens in just six New York counties, that there were 338,000 more votes cast than voters who voted. These are just a few shocking examples of the urgent need for reform. You can help. Visit auditny.com and learn the facts, how to volunteer, and make a difference in your community. Again, volunteer, donate, or spread the word. Start at auditny.com. That's auditny.com.
A free solution on the WYSL stations.
Welcome back to A Free Solution. I'm Kevin Wilson, here today, joined by Tim, the Freedom Variant O'Connor.
I'm here, Kevin. And look, the biggest news of the week, the biggest news perhaps of the Libertarian Party's existence, Donald J. Trump is going to be attending the Libertarian Party convention like in a couple weeks. He's going there to beg us for votes. It's huge.
It's huge. And you believe this is a good thing.
Arguably, what I think the goal, and I think we fail when we say that the goal of a political party is to get people elected. The goal of a political party is outreach and growth. Okay. So I want to say unequivocally that I don't like Donald Trump. I want to say unequivocally that my libertarian credentials, as imperfect as they are, and as pragmatic as they can be sometimes, are not threatened by Donald Trump coming up and giving us a big, long-winded, rambling speech about how great he is. Like, they're not in jeopardy for that. What I see as a net positive is that there's going to be a lot of eyes on the Libertarian Party. Not since Bill Weld ran for vice president have we had this many eyes on us.
Bill Weld and Gary Johnson did bring a lot of positive attention to the Libertarian Party because what they were offering in 2016 was an alternative to Donald Trump for a lot of Republicans and an alternative to Hillary Clinton for a lot of Democrats, because the Libertarian Party said, you don't have to choose between these two bad options. We are not embracing these bad options. We are like offering you something fundamentally different and more respectable than what the major parties have delivered, because they have failed to bring forth good, effective candidates who are standing up for liberty and are going to fight authoritarianism. Because that's what the Libertarian Party should offer, is that they should offer that alternative, that we are the only party who are going to fight for liberty and our candidates are going to fight for liberty. I don't agree with Donald Trump speaking at the convention.
Why? Why does it bother you?
Because I know it's not a threat to, like, the party being associated with authoritarian candidates like Donald Trump, I think is a threat to the brand of the party. That, again, that's what people are looking for. Like, they're looking for that Gary Johnson figure says, I'm looking for something new and fresh and different. And now you have this dude speaking at the party. Like, I thought, like, I was looking for something different. Why are you having this guy speaking here? Why are you having this guy going in, like, having a pitch to your members at your convention where you're supposed to be offering an alternative to Donald Trump? Again, the Libertarian Party is a partisan organization. The point, and I know you disagree, but the point is to try to get candidates and then make an impact through elections with those candidates making an impact with voters, right?
I don't disagree that that's the stated and current goal and has been the stated.
It's not the current goal of the current LNC. It's their goal is
that
to,
we've failed at it miserably, right?
We were making progress in like 2020 and 2021. The current goal of the LNC is to get engagement on social media and get media hits, right? But like, not all media attention is good media attention. Like, just because people are talking about us. No, just because people are talking about us does not mean that we are like making a positive impact, right? It doesn't mean we're winning hearts and mind by doing that.
Right. But if they're not talking about us at all, we have no opportunity to win hearts and minds. That's a reality. Okay. So Joe Jorgensen, who is a beautiful person and a devout libertarian, did not bring people to the party for us to have conversations with. A conversation with Trump supporters, when arguably what we're going to end up with, and this is where you and I will probably agree, and whether we agree it's a good thing or a bad thing, we will have people that will be calling themselves libertarians, but voting for Donald Trump. If they stay as libertarians, perhaps we grew the party. Now, I think that engagement should be the goal of our political. You might be right.
I really don't think like him speaking there is going to have a bunch of people suddenly say, oh, I want to join the Libertarian Party, because what he said and what the Libertarian Party put out in a press release is join the GOP in fighting Joe Biden. Like our party put out Donald Trump's statement in their own press release. Like it's to join the GOP and fight Joe Biden. Like, are you kidding me? Like, we are running our own candidates. We're undermining our own candidates with like putting out that statement. It's ridiculous. What are we doing to our own people? We're cutting their legs out from under them by like saying, like, oh, in order to have relevance, we have to have this guy, our opposition, come speak with us,
begging us for attention and votes.
He's not even going to do that. You said like he's going to give a rambling speech. I agree with you. That's what he's going to do. He's going to talk about himself. And like I'm sorry, like our friend Sean commented and he says, if the LP can get him to commit to free Assange, it's the biggest win in party history. But my brother, he was the president. He could have done that.
He had four years
to do that. Instead, he talked about like how he should be like prosecuted harder. What on earth would get him to change his mind to like really do that? And even if he did commit to doing that, like the dude says different things on any given day, depending on what audience he talks to. Like, there's nothing to be gained from this. I mean, like, other than like making like people mad about it. Like, Gene's, I'm pissed about Trump being at the Libertarian Convention. Like, mostly it's people in the party being like, what are we even doing here?
I'm going to go again, and now I'll repeat it again, and arguably, perhaps that this becomes nonsensical. We want engagement. We want eyes on us because we know, Kevin, that we're right. Okay. We know that the areas where Donald Trump did okay, we know the areas where Donald Trump failed miserably. Everybody can understand those things, but that we need a platform to do that. We need people to talk to do that. I get being concerned, but it's like you not being concerned about people getting fooled by cultured meat. I'm not concerned that people are fooled by Donald Trump. They see him as the opposition to the state of the things that are going on in our country. They see, doesn't matter that he's horrible at it. Doesn't matter that he's really bad at it. Doesn't matter that he ended up complying with every demand that they made with the COVID regime. Okay. Doesn't matter. They still see him as opposition to them. Now we're much, much better as opposition to them than he will ever be.
First of all, who's them? Like, let's back
which
up.
Them? Who's, I was you, I mentioned you, several of them.
Yeah,
Kevin.
You said I know. Like which them? You're like
the deep state
people see
system,
him as opposite.
We have an autocratic system, right? Don't you think? Like we have
no, but like
agencies that write regulations. That's autocratic. We have a House of Representatives that gets to vote on bills and rules are suspended. They're not doing the job of legislating. That's autocratic. Like it's not an autocratic person. It's an autocratic system. So them, the deep state, those systems that are ruling us without our consent and without our representation having impact on it. That's what I mean.
Right.
Them.
Okay. But I don't think that most people really see Donald Trump as opposition to that. I really don't. Like, I certainly don't. Like, he is a creature of that same system, right? And again, what the Libertarian Party is supposed to offer is the alternative to that, the alternative to Donald Trump's cronyism or Joe Biden's cronyism. Like, we're supposed to be the ones who are saying, like, no, we have a fresh voice and we can actually like oppose this system of government perpetuated by both parties, specifically the people at the top of the parties like Donald Trump and Joe Biden. And like, we need something fresh. We need something new. And again, like, what the ideas for doing that, like, there are different like strategies for being able to engage in that level, but I don't think it helps us in any way. Like, and by us, I mean like small L libertarians in any way to engage with like someone who's an authoritarian, like in this manner. And I know I got a comment from Sean here on YouTube. He says, I don't want eyes necessarily. I want influence. Like, that would be great. I don't think that's going to happen. Like, Donald Trump, even the people in Donald Trump's close orbit have not been able to effectively influence him not to be like an authoritarian. I've got to not swear here, but like not to be someone who is going to make foolish moves and concentrate his own power and end up building up the deep state that he says he opposes. Right. Like, and I think it's naive to think that him speaking at the Libertarian Party is going to do anything other than make people assume that libertarians are in the bag for Trump, because that's going to be the headline. The headline is just going to be Donald Trump speaks at Libertarian National Convention, and no one will read past that headline. They're just going to do that. And then when we're out collecting signatures, to Gene's comment here on Facebook, that will be seen as Trumpsters at a time when I'm collecting signatures for ballot access. Like, my goodness, like if I were running for office this year, I would have to explain that to everyone. I mean, the signature process is going to end before this, but if I were running for office afterwards, I'd be like, oh, aren't you the party that like just basically endorsed Trump? And I'd be like, no, he just spoke at the convention. They didn't endorse him. Our candidate is so-and-so. But most people aren't going to understand that. They're just going to see, here's a party that supported Donald Trump. That's all the headlines are going to end up like conveying. Because, Tim, the mainstream news media is not our friend. We know this. You've talked
they
about
never
this.
Have been our
that,
friend.
That's all they're going
to,
especially when Donald Trump's
to
involved.
Beat them at their game is to get eyes on guys like you, guys like me, people like Sean, people like Gene, people like Shelley, people like Patty. That's the only way to do it. And we're not doing it. I think that that's a reality that we have to accept. I want it to be philosophically pure. I want us to offer the Javier Milei, but better. Okay. I want us to offer that.
Should have had him.
Who is that? Where is that?
I mean, like, gosh, they're all alternatives out there who are like gaining steam. Like someone like Spike Cohen is great. Like
absolutely.
He's funny. He's an activist. He's interesting. Like, find ways to draw more attention to the people doing like actual, like impactful good work. Right. Like, and that is tough. Or, you know, start by building a bench of people, which again, the party was trying to do in 2020 and 2021. Like, I know people didn't see it like in some libertarian spaces, but they were electing state representatives. They were working on like those state level races to try to like make an impact there. So you have the bench. So then you have the credibility to run legitimate candidates for governor and then eventually legitimate candidates for president. Like, that was a strategy that they tried. And then they threw it out the window in 2022 and said, you know, screw it. We're going to just like work on social media engagement and media hits. And that's it. That's like the only metric now that they care about. And they're like, oh, we're influencing the conversation. No, like the conversation is now like how we're associated with Trump. Great. Like, how's that helpful in any way?
I've already explained it. The failures are that we didn't get Larry Sharp on the ballot. The LP had an opportunity to help us there. They did not. That wasn't the 2022 executive committee. That was the 2020 executive committee. That's a reality. Yeah. Okay. There's a huge, massive failure there, Kevin. And I've been disappointed ever since. And I think that this argument of, yeah, okay, I get it, man. Actually, I get the argument about Trump. I get it. I'm ready to say to anyone that's willing to discuss this with me that him showing up at the convention doesn't change a thing about libertarianism. He's not a libertarian. He's never been a libertarian. He did like two things that were arguably libertarian, and then he caved, all right? So he's a populist authoritarian, and yeah, he spoke to us to beg us for votes. Yeah. Perhaps we're the kingmaker.
Maybe. I mean, he thinks so, because the Joe Jorgensen got enough where it split the gap between him and Joe Biden, right? So like, that's Joe Jorgensen, who like people talk about her campaign. We were talking about how her campaign wasn't successful in a previous like break, you know, but and.
I wasn't not successful, though. I don't want to be unfair to her. Like, you know what I mean? But go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. But people think of that campaign as like not very successful, and fair or not. And Donald Trump thinks, oh, I can grab some of these folks. And we haven't even talked about like RFK inviting Trump to a debate at our convention, which we're going to have to save for the after show. But like,
right.
I said, like, honestly, like Sean posted, the audience will be booing. Like, yeah, they probably will in some cases. Will. Like the best case scenario is that Rachel Maddow like includes a clip of people booing Trump. Like, ah, the libertarians booed him. Okay. Anyway, like on to like how much like we want to grow government. Okay. Like that's like the best case scenario to me, but like we're gonna keep this conversation going, but we have to end the WYSL show. WYSL, go find our podcast if you want to hear this conversation and see where else it goes, because we've got to talk about RFK maybe joining the convention as well. What a week, folks. All right, thanks again for joining us here on A Free Solution. We're gonna be back next week. Have a great night, folks. Take care.